Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guests are Rhonda and Kira Findling, mother and daughter. We are so happy to be spending time with you both. Rhonda was a Santa Rosa JC counselor serving underrepresented first-generation students in special programs for over 25 years. She is also the college founder of the Second Chance Program for formerly incarcerated students, as well as members of the Holocaust Story Project of Northern California. This is where she shares her father's survivor story in classrooms with a message of the importance of standing up to bullying and fighting against the rise of fascism. Rhonda and her partner Heidi raised two amazing daughters locally in Sebastopol. Hello, Rhonda.
Thank you for having us. We're so excited to be here, and we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience today.
Yes, you're so welcome. And the us is about Kira, your daughter. So Kira Findling is a writer and artist living in Berkeley, California. This fall, they'll begin a master's in counseling psychology with the intention of working as a somatic therapist. Kira's short films have premiered at festivals across the United States, and their writing has been featured in several publications. Their play, Dyke TV, will be produced by Left Coast Theater Company this summer. Kira graduated from Oberlin College in 2019, where they led consent workshops and sang in an a cappella group. They love spending time in nature and with the queer community. Hello, Kira.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, really excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you.
Yes, we are so looking forward to speaking with you both in more detail and learning about your lives. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of July 6th, 2025. The last week of the U.S. Supreme Court's term revealed some major decisions, most of which were not favorable for the LGBTQ+ community. But let's start with one that is. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of a federal law that requires health insurers to provide coverage for preventive treatments recommended by the federal task force in Kennedy v. Braidwood. These treatments do include PrEP. That's the pre-exposure prophylaxis treatment to prevent an HIV infection. A Texas company sued over this requirement, claiming that covering PrEP violates their freedom of religion because it, quote, encourages and facilitates homosexual behavior, end quote. The Affordable Care Act requires insurers to cover preventative care recommended by the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which, since 2019, includes PrEP. HRC's President Kelly Robinson said, quote, this decision means millions of Americans, for now, can breathe easier, knowing that critical preventative care remains within reach, not a luxury reserved for the privileged few, end quote. And the Supreme Court also issued a decision in the case of Mahmoud v. Taylor, the case brought by parents who said that their First Amendment rights were being violated when schools used books that included LGBTQ+ characters. The decision was split 6-3 along ideological lines, with Republican-appointed justices siding with the religious parents who wanted to opt their children out of reading books like Prince and Knight and Uncle Bobby's Weddings in Montgomery County, Maryland schools. Justice Samuel Alito wrote for the majority saying, quote, the court does not accept the school board's characterization of the LGBTQ+ inclusive instruction as more exposure to objectionable ideas or lessons in mutual respect. The storybooks unmistakably convey a particular viewpoint about same-sex marriage and gender, end quote. And he went on to say, quote, regardless, the question in cases like this is whether the educational requirement or curriculum at issue would substantially interfere with religious development of a child or pose a very real threat of undermining the religious beliefs and practices the parents wish to instill in a child, end quote. Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote the dissenting opinion, saying, quote, casting aside long-standing precedent, the court invents a constitutional right to avoid exposure to subtle themes contrary to religious principles that parents wish to instill in their children. Exposing students to the message that LGBTQ people exist and that their loved ones may celebrate their marriages and life events, the majority says, is enough to trigger the most demanding form of judicial scrutiny, end quote. The case did involve several sets of Christian and Muslim parents who objected to their kids reading the books that mentioned LGBTQ plus people. The school district had an opt-out policy that they later rescinded because the district claimed the opt-outs were becoming unworkable. Some parents in the district protested to get the opt-out policy reinstated, while others protested in favor of learning about LGBTQ plus people. Equality California's executive director, Tony Hoang, said, quote, while religious liberty is fundamentally important, it should not force public schools to exempt students from lessons that don't align with their families' personal religious or cultural beliefs. He went on to say, quote, LGBTQ plus themed books are among the most banned and challenged in school districts and libraries across the country. The decision will make it even harder for those books to find their way into the hands of students who simply want to read and who may find validation and acceptance in the process, end quote. And here in California last week, the California Attorney General released the hate crime data for calendar year 2024. California saw reported anti-LGBTQ plus bias events rise 13.9% over 2023. While the increase was significantly less than the dramatic spike in such incidents that was reported last year, state prosecutors cautioned that a lack of data likely accounts for a steep year-to-year drop-off. Overall, reported hate crimes increased 2.7% from 1,970 to 2,023 in 2024. Hate crimes involving incidents of racial bias decreased 0.6%. Reported hate crimes involving religious bias increased 3%. From 394 to 406. And prosecutions for hate crimes increased from 679 to 818 in 2024. Attorney General Bob Bonta said, the California Department of Justice remains steadfast in our commitment to continue working with law enforcement, elected leaders, and community organizations to keep our communities safe. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, we are talking with Rhonda and Kira Findling, mother and daughter. We're so happy to have you join us. Thank you so much. So, Rhonda, we wanted to start with you and ask you a little bit about things that you mentioned in your introduction. So you said that you are involved, you were, before you retired, involved with serving underrepresented first-generation students. We were wondering, could you talk a little bit about that and how you got involved in that?
I've always had a passion for working with marginalized communities. Pretty much my whole life, that's the work I've done. And so for me, when I became a counselor and I, you know, wanted to work in the education system and the community college system specifically, I started in a program at SRJC called EOPS. And EOPS is for low-income, first-generation students. And that just became, that was my passion. I just loved it. A lot of Latino, Latina students. I learned Spanish along the way because that was important to me to better serve my students. And really, when you work with first-generation students, you're sort of the bridge to the higher education system because, you know, I would get asked questions like, well, what's the difference between an associate degree and a certificate program? You know, really stuff that we take for granted. That's just basic stuff. And so you're educating students every day about how things work in the community college system and how they can be successful. And you're, you know, my goal was always to be super student-centered. The student comes first, and I'll do whatever it takes to help that student be successful, whether it's accessing the resources at the college, because Santa Rosa Junior College has, it's like a whole social service agency. The college has so many resources, everything from free food on campus to therapy, you name it, bilingual services, you know, just lots and lots of services. And my goal has always been to help my students be successful in their education program because I believe so strongly in education. It's what turned our family, my family, around. My dad comes from poverty. My mom comes from very simple means. She didn't really go to college. My dad's mom was illiterate, you know, no access. And then I saw how our lives got turned around by education. My dad's a Holocaust refugee who was in the foster care system once he was rescued and brought here to Detroit. And eventually was a high school dropout, but eventually made his way back to college. And then when I was young, I literally saw our lives change because of education. So it became my passion to help other people with that journey of education as a way to turn your life around. And that led me to doing the Second Chance program at Santa Rosa Junior College and helping people who've been incarcerated, people who've been in the system, to turn their lives around. And our philosophy is your past doesn't define you, it's what you're doing going forward. And I truly believe that with the right support and with education, I've got tons of success stories I could share, you know, and I'm still involved, even though I'm retired. I'm working as a, what we call it, like an adjunct faculty, and I'm serving our juvenile hall. So I work one day a week in juvenile hall. We have a program there that's part of the Second Chance program, where we have over 20 students there who are post high school, but they're still, you can be incarcerated in juvenile hall in California up to age 25. So once they're done with high school, that's where we come in, and they're either taking online classes with us at Santa Rosa Junior College, or we bring two classes a semester in juvenile hall inside for face-to-face classes. And so I'm the counselor, I go in, and I work with students once a week in juvenile hall. And I love it. Honestly, I just, for me, it's, I love connecting with our students there. And
yeah, it sounds like very powerful programs. I mean, that, you know, the Second Chance, giving these kids, these young adults, opportunity. And so the education piece is fascinating because you've been there with your family and you saw how they rose to the, you know, that, through education. What did your parents do after they got educated?
So believe it or not, my father, when I was young, he put himself through law school. He worked full time and went to law school at night. So he wasn't around a lot, but he eventually became a lawyer. And that literally changed our lives. When I was about 12, we finally could like buy things we could never buy before. And it was like changing economic classes, you know, and so that's basically what happened. My mom didn't really work because we had four kids in our family.
Let's check in with Kira. So Kira, your resume, you sing, you're a writer, you're an artist, you're a playwright, and it goes on and on. Tell us about the work that you're doing. Is there something else that we need to know?
Well, thank you. It's so sweet. I know it's so funny hearing your own bio read out, like, whoa. But yeah, I feel like all the things that I do are always about getting closer to other people and learning about other people's experiences. And yeah, I feel like in many ways that's led me to art making, writing, and, you know, film and playwriting. They all feel so intertwined to me. And then, yeah, this new adventure that I'm about to start to become a therapist feels very connected to, yeah, this desire to just get closer to the human experience and the intangible things that we're all feeling and connecting over. So I think like anything in that realm really excites me. And I'm not great at sports. So, you know, there's something I definitely don't do.
Much to my dismay. I have vision because I was such a jock and I still am. You know, softball, tennis, right? I mean, athletics was, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And
it's
so
my moment on the interview.
I have two daughters who were in the performing arts, right? Kira did a lot of theater growing up, and our other daughter did dance. And so I thought I was going to be sitting at a softball field or coaching. And
didn't,
instead,
didn't turn out like that. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
That's all I had to say, but yeah.
Master's in counseling psychology, you want to get in there with understanding human behavior and stuff like that. That's beautiful. Good stuff.
But you say that you want to do somatic work. So say a little bit more about that.
Well, I was a kid with a lot of anxiety. It really defined, I think, a lot of my early life. And it's something that obviously, we all have anxiety and it's something that I still live with and deal with. But I think that for me, experiencing somatic therapy as a client has been really transformative to me and being able to feel in my body, oh, something's making me kind of nervous. Let me actually feel into this. It's not just a intellectual experience, it's a fully felt experience. So the prospect of being able to share that discovery with other people is so exciting to me. I have a lot of friends who are all very intellectual, talky kind of people, and I find that when we're able to ground into our bodies, it can be such a transformative moment. So I'm hoping to do that in my practice one day with people.
Yeah, do you practice with mom?
I'm always telling everyone to breathe, I feel like. Or if we're having a moment, a stressful family moment, I'll just put my hand on my chest and breathe. And I'm like, everyone shouldn't do this in this moment.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's great. I love it. Way to use your talent. Naturally, it seems natural coming from you, like it's a natural thing.
Thank you. Yeah, that's how it feels. I've jumped around to a lot of jobs through my 20s, and this finally feels like a path that really does feel natural and authentic. So it's sweet that you're reflecting that too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So, artist, what type of artist are you?
I like to draw. I make like little comics sometimes. I like doing collage, but it's really just kind of anything, kind of jack of all trades, not really a master of any of them, but like just like doing lots of
Except
little
writing.
writing, which I guess is in art too, not visual art, but yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Well, let's go to your writing. I mean, we said that we wanted to talk about your play that's supposed to come to
Yes.
theater in Santa Rosa. Could you talk a little bit about that part of your art life?
Definitely. Yeah. So it's actually in San Francisco, but not too far afield. It's going to be at the end of July, beginning of August. So pretty soon at Left Coast Theater Company. And it's just a short play I wrote. They do this really cool thing where they basically nurture new playwrights by coming up with these fun topics. And then they say, like, write a short play about this topic. So the topic that I wrote on was The Future is Queer. And it was basically write a play that's set in the future. So my short play, Dyke TV, is about a bachelorette style reality show, but it's a queer, like lesbian bachelorette, and basically how her network is censoring her from like saying the word dyke or doing things that are not in line with how they view gay people. So it's just like a short play, but I'm really excited. I've never really had a play up like that. So I think it's going to be really fun.
So, have you written other plays before, and this is the first one being produced, or?
Yeah, I've written a few short plays and I'm working on a longer, like full piece, but this is the first one that's been produced. I did a few semesters of a MFA in creative writing at San Francisco State, which was a really great experience, even though I ended up not sticking with it. Learned a lot about playwriting, and I did a lot of theater as a kid, so it's really fun to come to it from a more being the one who's creating the stories instead of just acting in them. So it's been really cool. I love it. Yeah.
That's a beautiful path, like from childhood to adulthood, from acting and being, kind of told, quote unquote, what to do versus now you're in the driver's seat of saying, this is what I want to have happen, and here are the lines.
Totally. Yes. Because I remember as a kid, even being in plays sometimes and thinking, well, I don't love that part, or I don't love this line. So now getting to be, create something that's so wholly what I want it to be is very cool. Yeah.
Do you have much control over what the director of your play is going to do? Do they call you in for consulting, etc.?
So with this one, it's interesting because not really. I think I might get to a little bit, like I might get to contribute to the process, but I think mostly it'll be me showing up and seeing what they come up with, which is interesting. I think that's not always how it goes. I've had other friends who are very involved with their plays being directed, but yeah, not this time, I think.
And so you're a singer as well. Did you get that from Rhonda? Did you get that from Mama?
Well, I'm not a singer. Oh, no. Kira can do harmonies. Kira was in a cappella groups thing all throughout in college. Well, and you sang in high school choir too.
Yeah, but Rhonda She'll do karaoke sometimes, which is
Oh, no. I'm not a singer at all. No.
But I do feel like she loves music, and that was something I really grew up with. Like, she plays the drums, and there was always a lot of music in our house. You know, like on our home videos, me and my sister were always dancing in the corner, whatever, like singing. So even if you're not a singer, I feel like my love for singing, you know, was inspired by that.
Yeah, and you played the piano too.
Yeah.
Whoa, what a talent.
Not well, but yes. Yeah.
What a talent.
I
Maybe
think
we could hear a few notes or something.
maybe later in the episode. When I get
Oh. No, you're not
that's
shy. I don't get that from you at all.
no, not
Right, Rhonda?
really. I mean,
You're not shy.
So, Rhonda, I'm curious. Kira said, just casually mentioned that you're a drummer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I wouldn't say I have played the drums most of my life. I was such a tomboy, and as a kid, that I wanted to do anything boys did. You know, I was very naturally athletic. I was out and playing baseball, football, basketball, anything with a ball. I was happy. When I was growing up, you see a lot of female drummers now, but back then you did not. And so that was like, I want to do that. Because that's what boys do, And I was just drawn to drums. I've always loved drums. So I started playing traps, when I was like 10. Traps are a drum set. And so I played drum set for a number of years and then transitioned to more percussion instruments. Like, I love the cajon. That's one of my favorite instruments to play.
Could you describe that for people who might not know what a cajon is?
A cajon is a Peruvian box drum. And it has a very interesting history. I'll just say very briefly, it comes from the slave period when slaves in Peru could not play their drums. So they would play on boxes, because they needed to play their drums, right? And so it turned into an instrument. It's like the national instrument of Peru. So I have two cajones here, and I love playing cajon. I'm not really a conga player, but I just like other percussion instruments. And I played with the group Mamaloshin for a few years. That's the Yiddish group. But I don't really identify as a drummer so much. My identity's other things, because I feel like if you're going to be a musician, you really have to, like you, Sheridan, you're a pretty amazing musician and you have to work at your craft. And I just like to kick around for fun and play. I'm not interested in sitting and doing my paradiddles and my whatever that stuff I used to do anymore. But, to keep your chops, so to speak, happening, I just like to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like what you say about your identities. That's not what you identify yourself as. So, what are some of your identities if you're thinking about identities?
I'm definitely queer. I consider myself somewhat genderqueer as well. I feel like I grew up genderqueer, just gravitating to boy things. I'm more comfortable in boy clothes, so I consider myself somewhat genderqueer. I'm Jewish. That's a big part of my identity. According to my DNA, I'm 99% Ashkenazi Jewish. And daughter of a Holocaust survivor, that's a big part of my identity because I grew up with that, being a big part of what I grew up with, is my dad being a Holocaust survivor and my grandparents and numerous family members being killed, which has, led me to be part of the Holocaust Story Project here in the county. I consider myself an athlete. I play tennis regularly. I grew up as a softball player, played varsity, all 3 years in high school, played on the tennis team. I'm a jock. I call myself a jock, I guess. Love sports, So that's, I guess, my identity is mostly those things. And a counselor, of course, a college counselor has been a big part of my identity as well.
That's a lot.
It is. Have you started pickleball yet?
Okay, I don't want to insult any of the pickleballers in the audience, but here's my philosophy about pickleball as a tennis player. Pickleball is for those who can't play tennis or who can no longer play tennis.
So maybe you'll get there one day.
Thank you, Kira.
I am a diehard tennis player. Definitely a diehard
Okay.
tennis player.
That's so
And
funny.
I think there should be money, public monies used to, for them to have their own courts because they have different lines on the courts than us tennis players. And so if they come in and chalk up our courts or put whatever down on our court, it's distracting for tennis players. So I'm all for them having their own courts. Woo! I would even use my
Okay.
taxpayer money for them to have their course.
That's good. I like you. I like you. I like that force. Yeah,
Fine.
got you.
Yeah.
So identities. You may as well go for it, Kira. Let's hear about how you, what are your all your identities?
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken a bit about this, but definitely being an artist, being a writer, it's a big word, but I think like a healer is something that I really seek to be in my communities and with others. Yeah, in terms of like other identities, yeah, being Jewish is important to me and the lineage that Rhonda talked about. For so much of my life, like my primary identity that I think was most important to me walking through the world was having lesbian moms. And that still is really obviously so core to me, but I think as I've come into my own like queer identities, those are also really important. Being non-binary and in the like trans spectrum of gender is really important to me. And yeah, I think just being someone who's very open to fluidity and change is pretty core to me. So.
Wow, we are going to get delve into that in our next segment about you being raised by two lesbian moms. I think that's pretty phenomenal. Both of us do. So we will be asking about those kinds of questions about your life and Rhonda and Heidi and your relationship. But we are going to break for a music break. And you talked about how much you both love singing so much and music. And I'm wondering if you would be so kind as to introduce the song that you brought.
Yes, so we both love this song. I fell in love with this song when I first heard it. It might have been like a year and a half, 2 years ago. The artist is Sona Jobarte, and the song is called Gambia, which is her country of identity. And it's a homage to her homeland, to Gambia. And she's an activist, and she's also the first female virtuosa on an instrument called the kora, Kora. Beautiful looking instrument. She's amazing. You can Google and watch her play, and it's phenomenal. And this is a gorgeous song, tribute to Gambia.
I couldn't have said it any better. All right, everybody, please enjoy Gambia by Sona Jobarte, and we will see you on the other side. if you just joined us, this is Living Proof. We have our guests, Rhonda and Kira Findling, and they brought this beautiful song, Gambia, by Sona Jabarte. How did you find that song? It's so gorgeous.
So good. Wow.
I know. I think I might have heard it on the radio. I listen to all, you know, alternative stations, and I absolutely love African, contemporary African music. And
so
as
gorgeous.
Soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God, I have to get this song. It's amazing. And then I, you know, learned about her a little bit and watched some YouTube videos of her playing the kora, and she's really talented. Wow. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for bringing it to us. Yeah, so we were talking a little bit about how we want to get to know you on a more personal level. So, Rhonda, could you start and talk to us a little bit about your relationship? You're married, legally married, and how you met Heidi and your decision to have kids and kind of like your life story a little bit.
Okay, I'll try to make it concise.
Okay.
We met in 1992. We were living in Oakland. We'd both been living there about 10 years. And we actually were met through some friends. Some friends sort of fixed us up, in fact. And then a year later, we decided to move north to this county. We both just wanted a change, and we wanted something a little quieter. And back then, in 1993 now, this was quiet. There was no traffic ever in the county. You could drive up to wherever you wanted to go and park right in front. I mean, they've really developed this county a lot. But nonetheless, we still have, you know, our hearts in the Bay Area for sure. And we love going down there, especially to see Kira. And then a couple years later, we started talking about whether we wanted to have kids. And Heidi for sure wanted kids, for sure. I was unsure. And the decision about who would carry the kids was an easy one, because for me, that was not happening. So Heidi really wanted to carry kids. And we actually started out by using my two brothers as donors. And then one of them was going through a divorce and just didn't want to continue. So we used an anonymous donor at the sperm bank in San Francisco, Pacific Reproductive Services. And we had a Jewish donor. And Kira was born in 97. And I learned everything about the insemination process to such an extent that I joke when I taught a seminar on sexual orientation that if straight people are having trouble getting pregnant, all they have to do is ask lesbians who've done donor insemination. We know how to get pregnant. Okay. So I became a bit of an expert on the whole insemination process. And then with Sonia, we used the same donor. You basically keep sperm in storage. I would joke to the class I taught that, you know, you pay rent on sperm, literally. So in a lab, we would get a bill for that every month, you know, $25 storage fee for your sperm. And then we got pregnant on the first try with Sonia. I think you were the second, maybe the second try, but pretty quick, you know, if you really learn the science of it. And yeah, so they both have the same donor, which is really nice. And our daughters are like best friends. It's so sweet. They're really close. And we, you know, we always try to like be a very loving family and put them first, you know, and I think it shows now because they're both really loving, caring, conscientious young women. So right. We're very proud of them. And the love they have for each other is just really beautiful. I didn't have that with my sister growing up. We fought a lot, and they just are so loving. They're like best friends. It's so sweet.
Where is Sonia now?
Sonia lives in New York and actually is here right now, just arrived like right before we started this segment.
She's visiting. Yeah.
She's visiting for the weekend. Kira picked Sonia up at the airport last night, and then they just drove up from Berkeley today. So
Sonia, she's a New Yorker.
She's living in New York. She got her master's at NYU in similar to what I do, higher education counseling, and she's working for NYU. She has a great job as a counselor for NYU, and yeah, She's fully launched. She's 20, wait,
She's
25.
25,
She
yeah.
just turned 25 in
Yeah.
April.
So I'm curious, before we go to you, Kira, Rhonda, when did you come out? When were you, did you realize?
Well, I was always different, but I didn't come out till I was about 25 because it wasn't as easy back then, you know? You didn't see queer people on TV or lesbians on TV, or we were in the shadows all the time. And but then in 1984, I joined, you might have heard of the all women marching band in the Bay Area called Sistaboom.
Oh yeah. They're great.
Yeah, so I was in Sistaboom for like 5 years, and it was pretty much all dykes and stuff. There were like 50 of us, and so I was around gay people, women all the time, rehearsals, and I just realized, okay, this is my community, this is where I belong. So I'm probably around age 25, I'm guessing.
And your dad was like pretty like supportive of you, right? I mean, both your
My dad was fine. My dad is such an eccentric nonconformist that nothing really rattled him. My mom was the one who was more uncomfortable, and it took her a lot of time, but they both love Heidi. My dad passed away almost 2 years ago, but they love Heidi.
Yeah.
And my mom's mom was actually amazing about it. My grandma, she was like, knitted us a blanket right away for our bed. We didn't ever say we were a couple, but she knew, you know? And
So
she called
cool.
Heidi her other granddaughter, and I couldn't believe it because she was more comfortable than her daughter, than my mom. My mom is the one who was more uncomfortable and took some time, but
And your grandma was born in like 1900 or something. Like,
I know,
it's pretty
it's pretty
awesome. Yeah.
amazing. Yeah. So my sister and brothers are fine with it. You know, aren't we have a pretty liberal family.
Well, your sister is also
My
queer,
sister's
so
also kind
yeah.
of bisexual.
Yeah.
She's been in relationships with women and men, and she's with a man now, but she's actually a surrogate attorney and helps gay men have babies. Yeah. So
Pretty cool.
yeah.
Wow, your family sounds
Yeah.
very interesting. I know.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to ask Kira, I'm curious about how was it for you when you were growing up as a kid having two moms? If you could talk about that experience.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think it's one of the biggest like blessings of my life. I feel so much gratitude to have had that experience, and especially now having so many friends who are like LGBTQ, everyone's so jealous of me all the time. Or I say things about my life that to me are so normal, and my friends are like, wow, that's incredible. So it's something that I feel so much like pride and joy about. I think as a kid, you know, growing up here, obviously Sebastopol is in many ways much more progressive than a lot of places in the US, but I think it was definitely very different to have lesbian parents at that time, and I really felt like a minority in that way, or just like little things would make me feel different. And I definitely had some experiences with other kids, which in hindsight, their parents were probably telling them this isn't good, and that's why they were rude to me or whatever. So there were moments that it was hard, but I think it was great to grow up in a house where, yeah, I don't know, with two women as my parents, like working collaboratively to raise us, like, of course, like, you know, heterosexual couples can do that too, but I think just growing up with, there's no gender division of labor or anything. It's just getting to see these people work out how they want to parent and what it is to be a family really, I think, impacted me and made me so much more open-minded than maybe I would have been otherwise.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking. So, my background is teaching, and when Father's Day would come up, I had a lot of students who didn't have fathers, and I felt very awkward. And I'm wondering how that was for you growing up, especially in elementary school before you could articulate things. How was that for you?
Definitely. Stuff like that, I think those were the moments that I felt the most different. And also, I think being Jewish for me layered that on of if we're doing Christmas at school, if we're doing Father's Day, all these things where I would have to say, well, That's not my life. That's not my family. It's funny because I don't feel that way now, but as a kid, it was, it was a big thing. Yeah. And it makes a difference when you have educators who are sensitive to that as well. Because, I would make, if we're making a Father's Day card, I would make one for my grandpa or something. And I think that would help be like, look, this can be whatever day you want it to be. But some teachers are more attuned to that than others, for sure.
So I'm thinking, Kira, did you have a coming out or growing up with two women, you were just kind of natural yourself? How does that work for you?
I think I felt a lot of openness to any identity, coming from a home where, like, and knowing a lot of like lesbians and gay men growing up, I felt very comfortable, exploring who I was. The funny story that I remember that I always tell people is when I was about 12, I was realizing that I was bisexual or pansexual was the word that I used more at that time. And I remember saying, I think it was to Heidi, not you, that I was pansexual. And she was like, what does that mean? Like, are you attracted to pans or something? And I remember at the time being like, hey, that's not respectful of my identity or whatever. But now that I'm older, I'm like, I know it was totally like in good fun, and she did not know that word either. So I think I had like those moments of talking about that. And then yeah, but I mean, in terms of like, I've dated like people of all genders, and I think there was never really had to be a moment with my parents where it's like, I'm dating this person, and this is a coming out moment. It was just like, there's an openness to whoever it is, which is great. And I mean, I think there have been like coming out moments for me in terms of gender, which is definitely interesting, in terms of like starting to use they them pronouns and opening up conversations about that. And it's been like really beautiful for me to do that because I think sometimes in my generation there can be a little bit of a divide with older folks who have trouble adopting the pronouns, And I think that in the beginning for me, I felt a lot of resistance, like, oh, well, if someone doesn't get my pronouns right, it means that they don't understand me or they're not trying, et cetera. And I think now that it's been longer, I have so much like respect and connection to my queer lesbian elders who like know so much about gender and have been having these conversations for so long. It's just maybe like the language we're using has changed. But just because me and someone else might not be able to meet on the language right away doesn't mean we can't meet on what's beneath the language. So that has been a lot of like a big growing moment for me to like open my heart and not be so to know that like to try to read someone's intentions a little bit more, even if they aren't able to always land it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that because we've had many people be impatient around this topic for sure. So, wow, thank you.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, like I have empathy for like if no one's ever getting it right, you can kind of get that like, why is no one seeing me, But I think there has to be room for both because like you said, like we got to connect and not go straight to impatience, hopefully, if we can,
It's hard also. I mean, you know this, everybody knows this, but it's just the plural singular thing that gets in the way, I think, more than trying to be rude or disrespectful and not seeing your identity, you, Kira, or anyone who identifies as non-binary.
Right.
It's very difficult. And then when I'm talking to another parent who has a non-binary child, and then another child, two of them, and then my friend will say they did this, and I'm thinking, well, is it both her kids or the one kid, or so there's all that
Right.
questioning, and it's tough. It's very tough. Speaking of impatience, I just have to be patient to not interrupt my friend every second to say, like, who are you talking about? Just let the conversation happen and then I'll find out. I don't have to know immediately because my friend isn't talking the way I wish my friend would talk to me, Just be patient like that for other folks, like you were saying, Diana.
It was challenging for us, for Heidi and I too, for sure, because of the reasons you're saying. But the other reason that I had a harder time with it is that we use they often in a very impersonal way. Like, oh, when are they coming to fix the street lights or what? You know what I mean? That's how we also use they. And so to adapt to using it for my daughter, felt like, because it feels impersonal, right?
You haven't shared that with me before. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another challenge besides the grammatical, who are they talking about thing? Are they talking about plural or singular? it's for me, it's the impersonalness of the they. So, but we're trying.
You've gotten a lot better, yeah.
Also, it forces, well, it doesn't force, but it encourages me to use the person's name more than how I would have maybe said he or she or something. I use their name, which gets me out of all the hot water there is to be in.
Right. You can just refer to that person so clearly.
I know, yeah, we're playing cards with a friend the other night, and their son and them are they them.
The parent and the son are.
I know, and it's new. I mean, I must have corrected myself. Sorry, 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 sorry. You know what I mean? So it's a practice, you
It
know,
is
and
a
sometimes
practice.
our brains don't make the connection. So I'm being impatient with myself,
Yeah.
and my friends are being impatient with us. So that's a good thing.
Well, they're being patient with us because every time we say sorry, they say, oh, it's okay. Because they see us trying, you know, and I think, I mean, one of the best pieces of advice I got when I was in a conversational Spanish class was the teacher said to us, don't worry that it's not perfect. The fact that you're trying, people will appreciate that. And it just kind of just allowed for imperfection and for mistakes. And
I had a professor, this reminded me of what you're saying, I loved it, who used they them pronouns, but when they introduced themselves, they said, I like they them pronouns, but I will accept any pronouns used with respect. And I thought that was really beautiful too, because it's like, I mean, not everyone's gonna feel that way. Some people are like, no, only these. But I think like I feel that similarly. I can tell when someone is trying or they care. And that's what shines through the most. So that's good. Like with you with your friends, I'm sure that they feel that from you, and that's why they're like, "Hey, it's okay. You're trying. This is good." You know.
I should write a t-shirt. I'm trying, y'all.
like that, Diana.
I'm trying, y'all.
So, is there anything else you want us to know before we close our show?
I
Rhonda,
mean,
you haven't talked for a
maybe a
while.
song or
Oh,
something.
yeah. A song, Kira?
Well, the thing that's most on my mind these days, to be honest, is what's going on in our country. And you know, I grew up under the whatever of fascism, right? Because my dad grew up in Nazi Germany, and that was his lived experience, and it filtered through to everything. And here we are, you know, living under the right to what I call a fascist government. And so my words of wisdom are more about we have to fight this, you know. And my dad taught me that as a Holocaust survivor, that you keep fighting, we have to keep fighting. I worry about the trans community. I worry about our community, the whole queer community. I worry about all marginalized people right now, the racism and, you know, in the immigrant community, it's everybody's, all the marginalized groups are under attack, literally under attack. And so my words of wisdom are we have to fight back, and we have to fight every day, you know, and to reclaim our, can't take democracy for granted anymore. So that's kind of what's been on my mind these days in terms of words of wisdom.
Yeah, I'm just curious about the classrooms. Yeah, we didn't mention that, but you talking to them about fighting and how to stand up to bullying, and how are they responding to
Yeah,
your
no,
talk?
it's go it goes really well. I did one at L.C. Allen High School in about 6 weeks ago, and I created these 5x7 cards, democracy, autocracy, and where I outline in very simple language the difference between the two, you know, like free and fair elections versus oppressed or corrupted by money or anyway. And so I handed out those cards. And then on the back, what can you do? Starting with showing up to protests, speaking out, things like that. And they were very receptive. One teacher, this was in Petaluma at Loma Vista, the bilingual school. The teachers, there were two teachers. I was presenting to two classes, and both teachers like, this is great. We're going to use it as a platform to start educating. It was sixth graders to educate these kids about what this is. Because I think in this country, we've never had fascism. You know, many countries have, right? Spain, Portugal, many countries have had fascism, Peru. And we haven't, and people have no idea about it. So it starts with like educating people about what it is we're seeing happening right now, and what is it, and how can we fight against it.
Yeah, thank you, Rhonda. Kira, before you give us your words of wisdom, can you give us a couple melodies?
Oh my God, I don't even what song would
Well,
I even do?
you love musical theater. You love things like
Yeah.
Therabareilles. What about something like that?
Oh God, I get so nervous. This is so funny. I like never do this. Okay. Therabareilles, let's see. Set me free. Leave me be. I don't wanna fall another moment in your gravity. That's like I always play that on the piano.
Oh,
beautiful.
wow, what a
Thank
voice!
you.
Wow,
So sweet. You can tell I feel comfortable
beautiful.
with you all if I'm gonna do that.
Oh, good.
Oh,
Oh, thank you
good.
so much for sharing your voice. I know
Oh
that
my
we
God.
ask a lot and it's very vulnerable, and we're all musicians and we
Yes.
all appreciate you so much.
Thank
Oh.
you. Are you gonna be performing anywhere using your voice? I mean, I would love to hear you sing.
I hope so. It's something I haven't done a lot recently, but I want to be in a choir again or in some sort of musical moment. I feel like it's calling to me, so I hope so,
Ah, yes. Oh my
Thank
gosh.
you.
Let us
Yes.
know when you're
Yes.
performing, we come and see you. So, do you have some words of wisdom, Kira, for our listeners?
Yeah, what will I think that our conversation about the pronouns and about, well, it made me think about intergenerational connections. I feel like my words of wisdom are just that I feel so strengthened by meeting LGBTQ people from different generations. And that I think we have so much to learn from each other and so much to teach each other. And I know that I'm sure, a lot of LGBTQ people will listen to this. And I think like, my word of wisdom is to like lean into those connections and be brave to speak across what feel like big differences, but often I think are not as big as we feel. And I just know that, I mean, it's always such an honor for me to meet like older lesbians, and it just means so much to me. And I feel like I just have so many friends who never get to connect with older folks in our community. And I guess, yeah, like it would make me so happy if somehow butterfly effect of someone listening to this, like an older queer person, younger person connect who maybe wouldn't have, because I just think like it's so beautiful when that happens.
Wow, that's beautiful. Listen, I just want you to say something to each other because I really appreciate the two of you being here, and I see your glow, and our listeners can't see your glow. So if you can say something about each other before we close, that'll be beautiful.
Okay. Well, I just really appreciate your fire. I think we mentioned that earlier in the episode of just you walk with so much integrity and so much knowledge of who you are in the world that you have been building and want to continue building. And I think a lot of my fire and conviction comes from you. So
That's
thank
beautiful.
you. Yeah.
That's very sweet. Thank
Yeah.
you.
You make me
Yeah.
cry.
I just think, I mean, I think our daughters are amazing. They are. They're just so, I mean, our friends always tell us that when they meet our kids, wow, your daughters are so wonderful. They're so loving, they're so caring, they're so kind, they're so connectable, they're
So nice.
respectful, all those values that are so important. And I see that, with you guys all the time, and it's just it's very heartwarming. And oh my God, we get the most amazing Mother's Day cards, you guys. It's incredible. Like they're just like every year, like, oh my God, how do you guys,
Oh my gosh.
just filled with so much love
Oh.
and so much I don't know, just words of just beautiful words from both of them, So yeah.
Well, great.
Yeah.
You
Thank
did
you.
it. You did it,
Yeah,
moms.
they did a great job.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
We're
Yes.
so happy to have you on our show. We want everyone to remember that just like Rhonda and Kira, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant, you can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.